You are listening to a production of the Tull Network, home of biting analysis. This is the Uncommon Cast RX-154, The Smolder.
I'm Aleph, the thesis-seeking critic, Duat Red.
I am Amit, the heart-snacking critic who no one helps make titles for episodes, Duat Pink.
It's a good title.
Thank you.
I'll give you credit, you do also most of the Laser Knees titles.
Well, yeah.
I will give you credit for that, where it is due. And I happen to be Sono, the moderately excited critic, Duat Green.
Putting heroes on trial, Critical Squadron, Duat Ranger.
So I've been reading this blog called The One Around Me. Actually, I think I talked about this before. It's a blog that essentially talks a lot about mostly Star Trek. It's a Star Trek-related blog that's kind of like, you know, fun analysis stuff from like a different sort of perspective. And it's very good stuff. I really enjoy it. Although, some of it is kind of like what some of the stuff in
Cannibal,
it is...
introduce yourself.
Yes, I'm the Cannibal Saracenian. I read this Star Trek blog, and I think it's pretty neat. You can find it by Googling. It's in the style of, like, Eruditorum Press stuff, if you are familiar with that. It's pretty cool. So some of the stuff in the Wakarangi, I have to admit, are the kind of things that, like, it... You know when you kind of see someone who's like, you think you're kind of radical, but then you see someone more radical than you that makes you look like a moderate? That's the kind of feeling I always kind of, it's like, whoa, calm down, dude. It's like, you don't have to be that negative about all these sort of things. But yeah, that was my two cents on that. Also, a lot of stuff about Dirty Bear, too.
Cannibal!
Reel it in!
I love where you're coming from. I would love to read it. I'd love to hear about it off the air, but we got a schedule to keep.
Yeah, okay.
This is an introduction section where we say our names.
You know, I think this needs to develop into the shtick that Sarsenian is just trying to talk about anything and everything about what the topic is, and we have to reel him back in.
I sort of figured that was the shtick.
I think it got too real there, though, for a second. I guess I have to say this now. Join us as we take a critical eye to Kamen Rider Ghost, will Takeru save himself and the Kamen Rider franchise in the 2 days he has left on this blue planet? Find out how we think he's doing as we pass judgment on Kamen Rider Ghost 47, Agreement, Each Person's Resolve.
Our writer was Fukuda Takeru, our director was Morota Satoshi. We know who they are. So,
yeah. Satoshi was the guy from the last previous episode, correct?
I believe so.
No.
I believe he's our lead director.
Okay, because I was just.
Oh no, yeah. No. Watanabe Katsuyo did the last two episodes.
Oh, okay. Well. This guy also got a lot of good shots in this episode too. That's why I ask.
So I'm the world, and I'm gonna bring us into focus because that's where we need to be. So here are my thoughts on this whole thing in general and stuff. First of all, I'd like to thank Sono for suggesting restraint in covering these last few episodes. Like, I was totally on board for 47 and 48 together, but she said, you know, let's maybe not do that. And I'd like to extend my gratitude to Aleph and Sarasenin for slowly enjoying the rest of Ghost with me. I seriously may want to make Ghost my last writer to keep up with that this level of intensity, and it's been great talking with you three about it like this, so...
Well, it's been great talking with you too, dude.
And, yeah, man.
Like, look, the close rating thing on a week-to-week basis, I could see ending with this one too, because unless they really mess something up real quick, I can't help feeling this would be just like the best place to stop, just with Ryder. Period.
We're mothballing this podcast, but I had so many ideas to...
Amit's been talking for a while in the background about changing his role in the show, and you know, body got to do what you got
to
do.
I may have to become one with the Force.
Anyway, wow.
We'll see. But more on this episode. I think there are a few things to be learned from this episode. Elaine and Makoto show us what not to do, or at least an unhealthy approach to take take towards complex social situations. These two are a bit outside of this direct conflict between Takeru and Adele. A bit, because they're pretty involved. To save Takeru and help avenge Ryu's death at Adele's hand, they each want to defeat Adele. And, like, this is such a big risk that I don't think they even tell each other that this is their intention. Am I wrong on that one?
I don't think
no,
so.
No, they really each kind of go their own way with it.
Yeah, and that's nuts, I think. Anyway, so, like, they were both closed off, and choosing to act in secret to save their friend and protect each other from what may come. But in doing so, in being so closed off, they are making things a bit worse. Onari and Hikari, reflect this in a more open and healthy manner, and ultimately they help Takeru the most by talking to him about his struggle. They come to respect his decision, they listen to him, and affirm that they will be there to support him if his fear realizes itself and he goes too far in his confrontation with Adele. The TLDR version of that is when people are hurting, angry, scared, or in a bad way, the best way to help them is to be open and honest and offer yourself up as support for them.
It's just there were conflicting emotions kind of all around this week. You know, Takeru doesn't know whether to avenge his father or save Adele. And, you know, he's got Onari and Hikari kind of playing shoulder devil and shoulder angel on that front. And, you know, Hikari being like, hey, maybe stop screaming about murdering this guy because you've got his brother sitting, like, 5 feet from you. And Onari being like, nah, but, you know, murder him. You know, to keep up with their really nice parallel, Adele makes, you know, the huge mistake of getting rid of the only person who still likes him, and then realizing that was possibly his worst idea. And, you know, Elaine
has
to decide.
A few.
Yeah, no, he's made a lot of really bad choices, but, and you know, Elaine has to decide whether he wants to really stand with Takeru on, you know, defeating his brother, even if that's not what Takeru wants, or if he can't really sever all of those ties to his old family. And you know, even Makoto and Fokoto are trying to cope with each other's existence and what they want to do about each other. And, you know, even in how hard we're going with paralleling Takeru and Adele, we still have kind of the old Takeru and Makoto parallel in Takeru asking anyone and everyone, up to the icons themselves, it's like, what's the right thing to do in this situation so he can work out his feelings? And Makoto once again's like, got a thing going on, and someone finds out, and he's just like, no, don't tell anyone. Especially don't tell Takeru. You know, just how far things have escalated with Fokoto. You know, decisions are hard, and I'm definitely with Amit that dealing with tough things is easier when you do it together.
And I just have to say, like, this is less about the meaning of the episode, which I think you guys have covered pretty well so far, but I just want to throw out, like, what a good decision point they've put in here. Like, there's just something so powerful about taking this whole conflict out of the abstract and the ideological into the obscenely personal. And it asks, you know, the really great question, the one that needs to be asked of every big idealistic hero type eventually. Sure, it's great, you know, love, kindness, all that stuff when, you know, you're just sort of kind of a little outside the conflict, your relation to it is kind of thin and is more about like, oh, I believe that we should be good to each other. As opposed to this situation where, like, as of now, he really, really, really hates this dude. Or at the very least, what this dude did. Like, it's really affecting to have the show go do this thing where they take it back to the start of the show, reframe the first thing we see in the series, and then start talking about the importance not only of sticking to your guns, but as they tend to do in the show, talking about why it is important, what makes it important. Like, I know it's going to come up a lot in the close readings and the postmortem, and I know that I don't need to keep comparing this show to anything else, but, like, it just felt a lot to me like an expanded version of Godai's, no, it's okay to want to wreck this dude who done you wrong, but what happens if you do wreck him? And that's so good. And that's this episode for me. I love it.
Yeah.
I cannot believe Onari, the Buddhist monk of the team, was like, oh yes, we gotta destroy Adele. I'm like, wow, Onari. Jeez.
That dude killed, like, his master. Like,
I know.
Like, he loves that dude so much, I love it.
I know, but still, you know.
No, wow. Yeah, it's...
You're a Buddhist monk, man. Wow.
The thing is, like, the fact that Onari goes off like that says so much about him.
Especially after that bit with Javert, you know? Mercy is at the heart of the teachings of the Buddha. Like, that, just that whole bit, that was... And now he's like this, and it's like... Wow, that's... Like you were saying, Cannibal, that says something.
Mm. Yeah. Also that, wow... The Buddhist monk, the Buddhist monk is really adamant about this. And also, although I will have to mention that Japanese Buddhism has had a very, kind of interest. Okay, well, that's a completely other tangent and probably controversial, because that'll bring religion into this, and I don't want to start that, so let's move on.
Okay, well, let's get into Bones, and the stuff I had problems with this episode of Ghost. Adele crossed another line in his long, storied history of crossing lines and attacking Alia, and it really made me mad. I mean, it was very affecting, so that's good. So I don't know if it counts, really, but it was bad. Bad stuff. Bad guy. For now. Elaine should have, spoken with Harumi, like... I really don't like that. Oh, I'm gonna... It wasn't like he was creeping on her, but just, I'm gonna get close, and then, no, I'm not gonna say anything, because, you know, heroes or men or whatever should never say anything. And that's what it felt more like than oh, I can't really talk to this, you know, person who I want to talk to. And we can cut that into pieces later if we need to. Ollie's actress was back in the Gonmom role, and that was still weird. It felt a little bit less weird this time, but I still wasn't, like, super thrilled with it. Let's see. Oh.
Okay.
This kind of relates to Drive, as some things do, in this show, and, so I'll have it out here. I don't think the question posed to Takaru of why do you hesitate, and I'm pretty sure that was Musashi, it's not being handled very well. I'm not going to bring up the full context, but it bothered me in Drive when Shinosuke said, I'm not going to think about it anymore, and this insistence on Takeru, like, deftly choosing a position feels reminiscent to me. Sage using, that, white ghost belt, I don't know if it has a special name or what, but,
I think it's just Dark Ghost.
Okay, Dark Ghost, there you go. But it's lighter, anyway. Like, it made me a bit mad, because, like, that could have been Alia's, and why not? Like...
Because the suit she already has is better.
I suppose. I guess
like the burning white edge ghost?
I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm saying Dark Necron Pink is better.
I guess I was thinking, like, oh, if this, you know, ghost suit with the driver and everything on the belt is the one that gets to unlock it, like, I wish that would have been Alia, so... I don't actually care about the suit. I just wanted to have a more active role, but it was a good way to go about it. And then, like, both Makotos want to do good, and I get that they have issues trusting each other, but if they choose to wait to choose a position and talk for a few minutes, maybe they could just work together to save Takaru. And anyway, it's frustrating that they couldn't just talk, especially because one of them can read the other's thoughts, and you'd think it'd flow both ways, and I don't know.
I took it less as, like telepathy. It's like, no, I am you, so I have your thoughts. I know what you're thinking, because I would be thinking this if I were you, which I am.
That's the Metal Sonic version of it. I don't know if anyone ever saw that Sonic movie, but it was great. Sorry.
Sadly not.
Okay.
I always meant to, but...
I actually think the Metal Sonic movie is... Wow. It foreshadows this perfectly. And what does he wear? He wears all blue. Sorry, Makoto is not a Sonic AU character.
So does Makoto gotta go fast?
Yeah, he's gotta go
fast. Way too fast! Whoa!
He's way past cool, guys. Anyway,
he is, though.
My final entry for Bones is, Elaine and Makoto are planning to betray Takaru's friendship and wishes to save him, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. So it's less an attack and more just, I don't know what to do here. I wish I could talk to them about it.
Okay. Takaru. We need to talk about this. Kanon exists! He has this moment where, like, he connects to Adele and he's relating with, like, these memories of family and he's like, oh, you really loved your mom and you had these feelings for your family and I'm, you know, jealous that you kind of have these memories of your mother because I don't. And then, you know, we see all of these childhood flashbacks that Takaru's had before and he's like, all of my memories are just of my father, me, and Makoto and Akari. And Kanon is right there! There's a close-up of her and Akari, and she's in every single shot, but he doesn't mention her. Like, is she a real person? Has Makoto just been making her up this whole time? Like, Takaru, acknowledge her. You brought this girl back from the dead.
Oh my god.
You chose to give up your own life to bring this girl back from the dead, but you don't acknowledge that she's there in every one of your childhood memories.
God, can you imagine if that was, like, the ending to Ghost this whole time? Oh no, Kanon never existed. It's like, oh, what a twist!
She might as well not exist! No one ever mentions her!
Yeah, there's a lot of the lamp test that is just not passed with her.
Oh god, no, Kanon could not even begin to pass the lamp test, which is a tragedy. But it's just...
What's
like,
a lamp
I've been frustrated. It's, can you replace this girl with a lamp and will anything be different?
Oh.
And the answer is no.
Oh dear.
I love Kanon, like, but, like, the show
I adore
not.
Her. And it's like, I've been frustrated by this for the whole show, but I've kind of let it be passive because I'm like, you know what? She's the quote unquote sidekick of the secondary rider, so of course she's not going to get much. But. She's in the memories. She's in the memories that he's referencing. Okay. I'm just kind of shrugging at Adele having killed Ryu. It feels a little convoluted to me. Kind of like, okay, here's the final nail in the coffin to make him the big bad for our hero, except he's already, like, assimilated the entire country. Like, it makes more conflict for Takaru, but that conflict feels weird to me. I mean, it's cool to see Takaru having this one weak point that he really can't resolve and he can't get past it. And I like the way that it plays out and all of the things that it brings up for everyone, but somehow the whole conceit of it doesn't really work for me. It's this weird reversal of my issues with Zuojir, where I actually really like the execution of what they're doing, but the concept of it feels weird and forced.
That's a good call. Yeah.
It's just like, okay, we're like two episodes from the end, and you're bringing this up now, and I'm not sure, like, what... Like, you're not raising the stakes anymore. The stakes are already as high as they're gonna go. But, like, I like everything it brings to the story, just it doesn't feel right somehow. Guess how not okay I am with Adele assimilating Arya? Just, you know, hazard a guess at how not okay I am.
So I'm guessing, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, we're at about 50?
Something like that, yeah. I can't wait until this poor woman is free of all of this forever. And gets to, you know, like, have a sandwich and a nap. I also just don't quite get how Adele was able to do that to her. Like, I can understand Igor and Gyro because Ganma rules are weird and, like, they're already little floating eyeball souls and whatever. But Arya's human now. Like, wouldn't she need the contacts for him to be able to do that? Because if he could do this to any human at any time, why not go after Akari and Onari or Makoto? Like, especially since his whole thing for a couple episodes was wanting to, like, ruin Takeru's support structure. Like, but how are you able to do this? That doesn't quite work with the rules that you've set up. I mean, I'm just nitpicking that because I'm angry that it happened. And it, like, in the moment I wasn't thinking that, that was just kind of something that came after. I'm just angry about it. Makoto, we also need to talk. Have you learned nothing? Oh, don't tell anyone, especially not Takeru. Literally all of your problems have come from not telling Takeru about the weird stuff going on in your life. Like, I don't care that the stakes are at their highest. He would definitely want to know about this. I mean, at least the whole time he's talking to Elaine about it, Elaine's face just reads like, Makoto, no, this is a dumb idea. We should definitely tell him. And, you know, in the end, there was no time for it to have not been told because everyone's just, you know, in the house at the same time. But yeah, Makoto, no. You've learned nothing. And, you know, well, Toei paid for that dark ghost suit, so I guess they're gonna get their money's worth out of it.
Though, like, I gotta say, one of my beefs with this episode is just, like, I love Edith. I do. I think he's potentially a very interesting character. The amount of him trying to be all, like, look at my wacky shenanigans, I just kind of wish they'd dial it down. Like, him being Dark Ghost, whatever, that's cool, but the weird ninja thing, I don't know, it just felt...
Edith, the time has passed.
Yeah. Like, it's 2 days till the apocalypse. Let's get the lead out, bro. Other than that, like, I'm sort of with you guys on most of that stuff that you've already brought up. The only thing I've really got to add is, like, Makoto, Fokoto, your self-sacrifice is, like, noble and stuff, but could you just tell your friends so that it doesn't need to happen? Just like, hey, there's another me who's evil. All right, which one of you is the evil one? We both say the other guy, so...
Who knows anymore?
FYI, heads up.
This feels like it should have been a thing from, like... Now it, like, really feels like it just should have been resolved, like, episodes ago, because it's like in every other toku, you know, like in Sentai, this sort of thing happens all the time. It's like, oh, man, you know, in Shinkenger, oh, no, Chiaki has, like, a weird clone who is doing... bad things. It's like, oh, gotta resolve that.
And in Sentai, we really only let those things go on for like 20 minutes.
I know, but so this makes it even weirder because it's like, well, what's the, well, again, I mention this all the time, but I have to keep mentioning it until they give us an answer on what they're trying to do with this whole plot line. It's like, now the other Makoto is like, ah, oh, you know, he's kind of assimilating all the, you know, he's becoming, slowly becoming Makoto himself. So it's like, okay, that's neat, but it's like, what's the point of this? It's like, I don't know, the writer had like one idea somewhere, but just like, couldn't convey it, like, at all.
Look, I've got an answer for you, but I can't give it until next week.
Oh, dear. It better be something, like, super amazing. It's like, oh, man, everything about this...
No. It's not a great answer. It's the moment is good, but, you know.
Oh, well... Yeah, I guess we gotta have some stumbles.
Look, nothing except Kuga is perfect.
That's pretty much, yeah. Well, Kuga had... Okay, that's another... That will be another
Kuga
discussion.
Was perfect.
We're just about to go into our whoa-ments.
Okay.
There's one thing I want to mention beforehand. It has to do with the show. That the soundtrack for Kamen Rider Ghost has been released, which you probably saw adverts of it at the end of this episode. And have you guys listened to it?
Not independent of the show, but I've listened to it in the show, and okay. I love it.
I've listened to it independent of the show, and man, it is a fantastic. It's a really great soundtrack. Like, it's like I kind of was like when I was watching the show. It's like, yeah, okay, cool music, but it's like when I really actually go and listen to it and kind of study
it. Who composed
it? Yeah, it's
who composed the show.
I checked this one time. Not someone we would know. He kind of only worked on some, like, I think some other toy projects. Let me check again.
Okay. I mean, if it's not someone we would know, there's no real rush on that.
Yeah, it's not someone we would
know. I was just curious offhand, but if it's not someone, you know, we'd recognize from other shows, then we don't need to look it up now.
I know the guy who did the Amazon soundtrack, but not this guy, though. This guy's a new guy. But, yeah, it's such a great soundtrack, because it's like... It does a really neat thing that I just noticed when I was listening, that it actually, it actually separates different, like, sort of characters by sort of genres, like, specific characters. Because it's, like, specific characters...
I've noticed that in listening in the show.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, you know, definitely. And it's like, when you listen to it, you kind of just realize how well thought out this all was. Because, you know, Takeru and, like, also Sage, because they're, you know, they have, like the more spiritual, more the mystical ties. So they obviously have this more, like, traditional sounding Japanese folk music and folk instruments. In their music, but then when you have the Ganma, who is, you know, whole thing is like technology and like go and like, you know, paranormal and all that sort of stuff. So it's kind of this like really heavy hitting like this techno music, and it's real. And since they are like fascists, it's also like really like loud and bombastic and kind of, you know, oppressive in that sort of weird way. That's like, ooh, wow. And it's like. Yeah, you really kind of, and you know, and also Makoto has this sort of lone sort of guitar riffs kind of showcase this kind of brooding nature. He's kind of, ooh, I wear all leather, and I go, gotta protect my sister, that sort of thing. So you kind of hear all this from all these soundtracks. It's really good. I highly recommend listeners to go check them out. Go check out Kamen Rider Ghost soundtrack when you can. It's really good. And I also checked the composer is called Go Sakabe, and the previous stuff he has been the composer of has been Data Live, which I've never heard of. Gosek, which I've kind of heard of.
Oh,
but...
I know Gosek.
Oh, okay. Well,
that has Gosek is actually if it's the show, yes, it is the one I'm thinking of. It's a neat concept. It's a little iffy, but the first couple of the first like case they do in it is really interesting.
I think I actually
but it had some good
that.
Music.
I think I actually watched that. A long time ago, but only like that one episode.
There was some people on a boat.
Yeah. I watched that.
Yeah, that's the conclusion of that is amazing. If you never finished watching that storyline, you should go watch it.
Okay, what else?
I don't know about the rest of the show, but it was real interesting.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. There's also Okami Shoujo Tukuro. Okay, these are just animes I've never heard of. Digimon, specifically like the new ones, the Digimon Try, you know, the things that apparently from my friend, who is a big Digimon fan, really likes those. And I don't know if you guys have watched the Digimon Tri OVAs or movies, whatever they are.
I don't know, I defer to Amit on that.
Yeah, we were just talking about Digimon.
Really?
It's specific.
The composer for Ghost did the music on Digimon Tri.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
The music in it was okay.
I don't know. Okay, well, I don't know how good it is. I never, because I don't watch it, but I heard them.
I know
I heard
Luca,
it, they were pretty good.
I know Luca is one of the
friend,
girls in it.
My friend.
I don't know which one.
I don't know things about Digimon,
but that's a fact I know.
Oh, yeah. I know that was also a thing.
Things.
Hmm. Mm. Oh. Oh, and he also has a Twitter, so, here's his...
crap.
Yeah. I don't know how weird it would be if it just like, hey guy, we really like your music in Kamen Rider Ghost, just us weird people from the English-speaking toku sites. But, you know, here's the Twitter, just in case.
I could be cool with it.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the things he's been composing, and I'd say this is definitely. I mean, I don't know about those shows, but I can say that I have a feeling this is probably his breakout soundtrack, because it's really good. Ghost has great music.
I have it saved. I need to listen to it though.
Oh, there's also one track, specifically like the last track of like this CD is very amazing. The very last one. You'll hear it when you hear it. It's
okay, but since everyone's here now, let's actually get into the show.
Okay, now we are finally going to get into moments after the crash, which hopefully nobody hears, because it was embarrassing, although there was some cool talk about Digimon and the music of the composer of Ghost who worked on that on Digimon Adventure Tri. Anyway, so, here we go. Not only does Ghost's music make me say whoa, but also these things that happen in episode 47. Akari calling out Onari on his inflexibility and how he is holding on to the grudge against Adele. Fantastic stuff. We've talked about it already. I liked Sage, the Great White Ninja. It made me happy. See him do his thing. The Uncanny Urasen Shadow Teaser was also pretty exciting, and I would actually now like to see more stuff with Urasen, like side stuff. They could do... You get a puppet, you get some props, you get, you know, a couple hours of people working.
Just do what they did with the Imogen anime.
Hey. I'd be happy.
That made money. Just bring back the Imogen anime and just put Urasen in it.
I'm just like, look, let's just have him. Have him.
Oh my god,
with,
yes. Oh god, Urasen and Ticket.
Tokuger.
That's all I need for the rest of my life. Just give them both to Wagon.
Thank you.
You know what I want? You know what I want? If they make that show, I've heard, supposedly, in the Kamen Rider Ghost websites, the host that posts frequent updates is apparently called Chibizen, the little brother of Urasen.
who
is apparently Urasen, but green, and I'm just
Ghost
like...
Ghost is a miracle.
I gotta know what this is. Like, who is Chibizen? Like, we gotta see Chibizen. Like, go, like, when we get that Ghost X8 movie, it better feature Chibizen. We gotta see that Chibizen.
Captain
it's like,
Ghost.
Insert songs and Chibizen. That's, like, the biggest thing. Get going, Ghost. Yeah,
maybe
that was Captain Ghost all along. It was Chibizen. It was Chibizen.
So you got there. I was just about to go there.
I was going to go there and mangle it, so I'm glad that you jumped in there first. I really love Fakoto explaining things to Makoto. It's good stuff. Anytime someone's talking to themselves, I know this is a sensitive subject, but I'm going to talk about suicide for just a second. Serial Experiments Lane, there is a moment where a character sees a duplicate of themselves, and one of them is, throttling the other, literally, and the one being throttled actually laughs maniacally and says, "I'm committing suicide," and it's pretty bad. Anyway, but I don't know, dark humor, I guess. To bring it back in, Lane was made by the guy who, Kanata, I believe is his name, he was like the head guy on Digimon Tamers, which is a pretty cool season of Digimon.
Whiplash in it.
Yeah. that show gets crazy dark in a couple spots.
Become a Lovecraftian thing at the end?
Yeah, pretty much, and it was great. It's like about being a parent and then, all your worst fears being realized and knowing that you can never really control... it's easy to feel that you can never really control your destiny, but, you can take positive, proactive steps to, do things and get along if you have people around you to support you.
The writer, I think it was called Chiaki Konaka, was also the writer for Ultraman Gaia. So, hey, that's another Toku connection right there. I really need to watch Ultraman Gaia at some point. I heard it's really good. It's on Crunchyroll.
All right. Go check it out. So Elaine resolving to defeat Adele because he owes Takaru so much made me happy. Also the use of the clips made it feel like the show's endgame has been set from maybe episode 13 or 14, if not from the absolute beginning, because of how seamlessly the scenes weave together that narrative. I mean, the narrative's a little bit of a fib, but now with all the time they've spent together and just the emotional realities, it all works, Let's see, canon is relied upon to discern who the real Makoto is, and, one, it's cool that everybody turns to her, because she is able to do that. Two, it's a really cool sell that, no, they're both real, and then
Girl's
tired. Is shocked by that.
She's been through a lot.
Could have gone without dropping to her knees, but, whatever. And then the final thing... Yeah, that's true. Aleph, I'm going to throw you a bone here if you want to talk about this, or if you already have it in your notes. The whole thing in the beginning where Adele and Takaru are, locked, and then their suits get, melted away,
yeah.
And they're in, this emotional, spiritual, the visual metaphor behind that and everything they saw, are you going to talk about that?
Oh, I had not put that on there because I wasn't sure which metaphor you were referring to, but yeah, that was real gorgeous, and I think I did make a quick mention of it just because that feels like another one of the Kuga callbacks they make. Go on, yeah.
Oh, I actually need to announce that I can't finish because I'm getting a call and I'm pretty sure I got to take off. So, unfortunately, we had a technical thing, so I got to go a little earlier than I wanted. But Sarasinian, now there are fresh notes for you to cannibalize. So I'm going to bounce and I'll talk to you guys later, and hopefully this...
Take care, man.
Me having to leave all the time doesn't happen anymore, but it may be because I'm gone already. Okay, bye.
Bye.
You guys, please knock another one out of the park, because I love listening back to these after I leave. They always get really good.
In that, I will step in and read some things that I liked. I still love just how outright offended Adele gets. Just about Takaru trying to connect to him and help him and save him. It's gone beyond this, oh, I'm the big bad and you're weak for wanting to help people, and jumped straight to, I am the best, how dare you defile my greatness by existing? And it's just kind of hilarious. Because he plays offended so well. As much as I'm not into this whole Adele killed Ryu thing on a narrative level for Takeru, for Onari, I think it's actually really great, and we kind of mentioned this, but it's just dude killed the guy I respect the most. Let's wreck him. Like, it's just parts of Onari's past are kind of showing in how angry and scared he is. And Akari being like, should a monk really say that? And just him come back with, well, I'm not a fully trained Buddhist monk because this dude killed my mentor. Like, it's rare that we get to see Onari act truly selfish. And I think it says a lot about him and who he's been, accompanied with the things that we already know about him. And I actually, I do really like how this becomes a conflict not only for Takeru, but for Elaine and to an extent even Makoto, because, you know, they've spent their whole lives with this dude. They care about him. Like, Makoto's regarded him as this great, like, soldier. And it's something that all of the writers have to deal with together and decide what they want to do about it. And, you know, Takeru knows that the right thing to do is save him, but he's struggling with it because his father's a huge deal for him. I'm 800% down with Kanon doing science with Akari, and I'm sad that that's not a thing that's happened up until now. And as much as I'm furious that he did it, I got some real nice satisfaction when we cut back to Adele later and he walks towards Aria as if expecting her to keep trying to reason with him, and then realizes, like, oh no, she can't, and starts to panic because he realizes that what he's done to the only person who even still remotely cares about him, and then immediately is like, no, this is for the best. I totally haven't made the worst mistake of my life. Nah, you hecked up, kid. You hecked up.
Yeah, it's... God, it's such a good moment, too.
Yeah, just no, he really... He knows how to play Adele's range of emotion. Because he turns toward her, being like, oh, you're gonna tell me that I should love my family and that I'm making a mistake. And, oh no, you're no longer a person. Oh dear.
You have become a part of the world, which is to say a part of me.
And
I can't
stand me. It really still takes some stones to then turn and face God, as God is telling you that you hecked up, and tell her to shut up. That's balls, man. And even if Onari's not on the same side as everyone in this, you know, I want to murder Adele and y'all don't, his advice to Takeru is still good and echoes Adonis's sentiment to Elaine, like, do what your heart wants. And then Akari and Onari kind of coming together, even though they still disagree, vowing to help Takeru achieve what he wants no matter what his choice is and what he ends up doing. Like, we're gonna help you and make sure that you get to where you want to be. I like Fokuto's confusion over his actions. I'm not sure that he realized that becoming Makoto would mean becoming Makoto. And it's kind of neat thinking about how his progression has been, that's led to the two becoming completely indistinguishable, even to Kanon, to the point where it's like, I don't know which one is the real one. It's actually like, no, they're both the real one. But he has these moments of, oh, well, I'm gonna help my friends. Wait a second, friends. Wait. That's not what I'm supposed to do. Oh no.
These aren't my friends. Yeah, like, look, for all I understand people's beef, and, like, I've got some of my own about how this has been paced, and how they really haven't done enough to really justify, like Cannibal was saying, they haven't really done enough to justify having this arc here.
Yeah.
Man, I'm really enjoying it all the same. Like, especially that fight scene. Y'all, that fight scene was great. Those are some good suit actors, some good directing. It made me happy.
I just wish I kind of understood what's it trying to say.
Yeah.
It's cool that they are like putting effort in like this these sort in like you know the sort of mechanics.
Like,
of this thing, but of how of this story, you know, in execution. But it's like, yeah, and I'm still unclear what the idea even is.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around. I think also I just want to continue giving love to how they had Takaru and Adele, you know, when they're merging consciousnesses, they're in their human forms, not their rider forms, and they're sort of stuck in that same pose to sort of show, like, no time is passing. This is an instantaneous exchange of information. I just, like, it's really good because, and again, like I said, it's a callback to Kuga because that's, look, y'all just watch Kuga. If you haven't watched Kuga to the end, like, just do, just turn this off right now, get going. You can I'm do basic, it inside a week.
I feel like every, like, I feel like every Kamen Rider fan
yeah, but I mean,
who
there's,
has been
there's still a lot of people who are just coming into
seen
the fandom.
Kuga at least once by now.
There's people who haven't.
I know, and hey, listeners, if you have just coming out in the, if you
I mean,
have just come
that's
in
that's
the
kind
fandom,
of what Aelif is saying. Like, if
go,
you,
go
if you haven't
Kuga.
Had the chance yet,
go
just...
watch Kuga. Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, he's
I know.
He's backing me up.
I'm just, yeah, I'm backing him up. It's like...
He's, you know, look, Cannibal's kind of fandom nobility at this point, so...
Am know, I? Oh, man.
I don't know, you're bigger than me. I'd heard of you. that's worth, I don't know.
Well, I have been one... I do remember that I have once been... On 4chan, I've been called the second coming of Ega Devil, so wow, okay.
Wow, that's nice. I mean,
that's
4chan is much nicer to you than me.
That's a terrible audience to get that.
Oh no.
That's a terrible audience to get such high praise from, but.
I mean, that was like from like years ago, so I don't even know what my sort of the word of mouth on me nowadays is.
Well, I just hope that I don't have one. Anyway, moving on. I just wanted to drop how much I also really just enjoyed Onari's deep and still so passionate love for Ryu and his memory. Like, I keep hoping the origin of that love will pop up at some point in an explicit sense. But at any rate, Onari getting aggro about how, no, this dude needs to get wrecked. I don't care if it's against all my vows and everything I stand for as a person. I'm going to beat this dude to death with a stick. Like, it's gorgeous. And it also makes it so all of those bits where he's been kind of flaily and screamy that have, you know, from the off, they kind of got on my nerves. I've gotten used to them, but now it feels like, no, we're kind of taking that and turning it into something. Like, yes, he's a really extreme guy, because he's never got his chance to, in his own mind, fulfill this thing he was after, because the guy who was teaching him how to do it got murdered by a ghost. Like, that's, I don't know, it's just really, there's something really meaty in there, I just like it. I also really like Adele just seeming, like you were saying, Sona, like, just seeming to get what he's done. Just the moment he puts the zap on Alia, he it's not even that he knows he's going to get got. He immediately regrets it because, like, now she's him, and again, he can't live with himself. Like, it's not immediate, I know it was a scene later, but I really like that bit.
It's real good.
Yeah, I also really liked Elaine's little soliloquy about, like, how he needs to make amends for his brother. Like, that's really nicely done. It's hard to do a monologue on TV. I think they managed it. I also really enjoy any time Akari and Takaru sit down for a heart-to-heart, but this one, like, hey, don't worry. We're all here to help you carry this weight. Like, that's next level. But, it's beautiful. Finally, just to get into my storytelling aesthetic thing, because real quick, just because for all I love Takaru going and fighting on principles and for a better world and just punching fascism in the stomach at every chance he gets, like, I really do love the turn of the screw here at the end. how they're trying to make it personal. It's a little cheap. I'm not going to pretend otherwise, but it's also a good plan, if only because it makes the conflict more obvious while also taking it out of the realm of the abstract. Like, this dude kills his dad. Of course he's going to kill this dude right back. Or is he? Dun, dun, dun. And that's... yeah, it's cheap drama, like you were saying, Sono. Like, it's not well planned, but I like the execution.
Did it?
It's a real weird feeling.
Yeah.
On the back of that Gokaiser crossover.
And my thing is, like, doesn't this kind of contradict what we learned in the movie?
Hi, please don't maybe tell me things about the movie.
Well, it seems like the movie is non-canon, so it's fine.
I suppose. Yeah, it's yeah. But yeah, it's definitely...
Say it again, please don't tell me things that
Yeah, happen. I won't say anything. I won't say anything, so, But yeah, just as Sono said, it is kind of weird.
Yeah, it really is. Do you have anything else for your womans?
I said this. I think I said this prior, but I really like the directing for this episode. Again, just as with the last one, I think they got in a lot of great shots. Like, particularly the one that comes to mind is the whole sequence of Takeru at, like, in front of the shrine at the temple, right? And then you had this, like, really nice picture of Takeru, you know, in the middle, sitting in the middle, while surrounded by all the ghosts of the past, all the other icons, and who say that we will, you know, we are here, and we will support you and all your efforts, and which is then contrasted by then what later happens with, like, with Adele. Adele has kind of a similar sort of sequence, character moment where instead it's like it has like all the Ganmisers sort of start talking to him, and it's like your will is wavering and we gotta do something, and then Adele just shuts them up, straight up shuts them up, and it's like it creates a kind of a really cool sort of contrast between these two characters, and it's also like, you know, a lot of other things, like one is shot from like a low angle, one is shot from a higher angle, one is in the kind of a one is shot at night, one is shot in a more brighter environment. It's really nice.
I've not made that connection, and I feel really dumb. That's a really good call, Cannibal.
Hmm. Ghost has had a lot of, I feel like Ghost has so far had a lot of, like, great, just really great camera work, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just really, like, memorable stuff, really memorable cinematography, and I'm really glad. And what else? Nothing really that comes to mind that you guys haven't kind of mentioned before. But yeah.
Mentioned and beat to death. Beat that dead horse.
I got nothing new to add, so. Yeah, let's go.
All right, then.
Let's move on.
Let's move on to our prophecy section, where we ask what we all foresee happening in Ghost.
I've already watched 48, so I'm gonna let this one go.
Yeah, same.
I haven't. I'm predicting last 48th episode. I don't know. Things are gonna blow up. Ooh, the Takeru. It turns out Yurusen was behind it all. Yurusen was actually the great leader of the great eye evil shocker, and it's like, now I can ask all the trivia I always wanted, and then like, oh no, and Ghost is like, I have to summon the power of Captain Ghost to combat Yurusen, and then Captain Ghost turns out to be Chibisen, the long lost brother of Urusen, who has been mutated into the lizard creature that he is now. And then it's like, you know, it's like, oh, Ghost dies again, because that's what Takeru does quite often, and it's kind of weird, but whatever, he dies, and then Takeru goes, now, go Chibi-san, you'll be my successor, and then Chibi-san becomes Kamen Rider Captain Ghost, and then it all ends in a cliffhanger, and then next year, we have airing on, like, I don't know, NHK, the Kamen Rider Ghost sequel, Kamen Rider Ghost RX. It's gonna all be about Kamen Rider Captain Ghost fighting against Urusen. And Akari probably makes her a Rider Belt too, and then stars in another spin-off movie, Kamen Rider Akari Returns, the movie featuring, I don't know, the Gatchaman, I guess.
Lips.
Yeah.
That's 48 is going to be a hell of an episode, clearly.
Yeah. Oh man, I can't believe they promised so much, but man.
Nope. That's everything that happens in 48. I've watched it, and I can confirm.
Oh man,
amazing.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to see Kamen Rider Ghost RX2. It's gonna be great. Onari's gonna become like, I don't know, Onari's gonna make his own Sentai team now. Yeah, Onari,
good.
Yeah, it's like...
He earned that.
Yeah, it's like Rocker Sentai or Onari Men, and all they do, and they will, like, make a new crossover, Superhero Tyson, Omega. It's like the Omega featuring, I don't know, what's a Toei, long-forgotten Toei hero?
Tenshin Ninja Arashi?
No, that's a forgotten, but no, something like even more obscure. Ninja Captor, yes. Onari Man, yes, Superhero Tyson Omega featuring the Ninja Captors. It's gonna be the event of the summer of the year 2025. Kamen Rider Ghost RX is gonna be like a 100-200 episode mega show. It's gonna last a while, so yeah, better buckle in.
All right, well, while we buckle in for that, we will also try and get our meditations in as we try and answer some of the questions that Amit left us this week. The first one on our icons. What did you take away from Musashi not directly answering Takeru and affirming that the heroic icons, quote, walk with him?
I mean, that's kind of what they've always been about. They've always been about being at his side and guiding him forward. They've always given him advice, but never outright told him how to handle a situation, because he needs to learn these things on his own. Like, it's not a question that they can answer. All they can really do is be like, hey, these are your ideals. Think about what they mean. You're not alone. And, you know, having Musashi, Sanzo, and Nobunaga at the front representing the three of them, representing, like, our three core riders, I thought was a real nice touch.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even notice that. Oh, man.
Because they're kind of, like, Nobunaga is the first icon that Makoto gets, and it's one that he takes from Takeru, and, you know, Musashi is so important to Takeru, Sanzo is basically the core of Elaine's arc. Was kind of like the big climax of his story arc. So kind of how they put those three up to represent the three of them, kind of echoing the whole sentiment of you have people walking at your side and you're not alone, was kind of nice.
I wonder if you can make like a character reading with you know, with Nobunaga and Sanzo, with their respective riders, as much as you can with, like, Musashi.
Oh, with Sanzo, you absolutely
Oh, yeah, Sanzo you can. Actually, I think I made a whole thing about saying how you can make, a comparison.
I mean,
between
Nobunaga's a little different, because Makoto, like, Houdini is the one that he really had the big thing with, but even then, like, Makoto never connected with his icons as much as, you know, Takeru did with all of them, and Elaine did with Sanzo. But I think just what Nobunaga represents within kind of the narrative of, you know, Makoto walked into this show by taking Nobunaga from Takeru. So I think that's really kind of at the core of, there's a connection between Makoto and Takeru via Nobunaga. That, you know, does mean something.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he took Nobunaga for the goal that Takeru eventually accomplished.
Oh, also, I forgot. I'm gonna read Amit's all his answers for this section. So Amit says, it felt like another side of what his friends are doing. His writer pals want to handle the situation for Takeru, and their solution is to physically neutralize the external threat. Akari and Onari get to the root of Takeru's strife and promise to intervene if he loses control and fails to manage his internal struggle. The icons come along in the middle and kind of remind Takeru that he isn't alone. I may be grasping for support, but Takeru has drawn each of the heroic souls into a connection with him, and they acknowledge that by saying here that they are there to support him. I wonder if that reminded him that he can rely on his friends, and that he isn't alone and doesn't need to shoulder the burden by himself. I feel like they helped him to be open to listening to Akari and Onari, and that's really important.
And I'm just going to add, because, like, Amit and Sono kind of hit all the actual good thematic ones, I'm going to be the guy getting into the nerdy mechanics of this and say, I mean, it's probably also those other things, but it's also likely that not a one of them could agree on what to do. Like, Nobunaga, Sanzo, Himiko, Goemon, all these, Robin Hood, Billy the Kid, all these guys in a room and like, hey, what do we do? And then they all have different solutions. Nobunaga's probably involves like shooting some people in the face. Dude loves guns.
Yeah, dude's probably just having a hard enough time being like, I have been in a Buddhist temple for the past like 8 months. I don't like it here.
With Goemon.
That monk is freaking out over there, and I kind of want to set him on fire.
Yeah. There's a couple monks, like, some of them are in here with me, some of them are just in this temple. I'm real sick of y'all. But you know, it sort of brings it back to, like, they've agreed that they're going to work with this kid who represents the best in humanity, or at the very least, the... You know, he's acting as humanity's surrogate in this grand cosmic conflict. And you know, they respect that. They want to protect that. And it basically comes into the young leading the old with the support of the old. And so that they can ultimately take over for them, which, like, look, I friggin' love that. Like, the amount of faith that Kamen Rider Ghost has in the next generation... Like, that's beautiful to me. I love it.
I mean, they are going to be the ones who are going to replace us, so we better hope that they're...
Except for those darn millennials. They're killing all of them. The things.
Oh, yeah, those damn millennials. Them with their... them and phones and iDroids.
Made and gave to them.
Yeah, and now they're not buying
Darn
diamonds.
Darn them for going after all their dreams that we told them they could achieve.
Yeah, and they're not even buying diamonds anymore. Ugh.
After we told them how stupid and useless diamonds were, and how bad it was to go into credit card debt, they stopped buying diamonds and going into credit card debt.
Mm.
Curses. Who could have seen this coming? What do you mean they listened to us and believed us when they told them things? What?
Hmm. Why couldn't you be just like the Generation Xers or what? I don't know. I don't know how to continue this anymore.
Yeah, it just sort of peters out, because, yeah. Anyway, our next question. Does anyone have a problem with Harumi and Elaine getting together if he survives his encounter with Adele? Does the age difference matter? How does the power differential being in her favor... does the power differential being in her favor make it okay? Is the power differential in her favor?
Look, Harumi, I'm fine with. Heck, I'd be fine with pretty much anyone that isn't one of his siblings or isn't Makoto and Kanon, because he, as an adult, knew them as very young children. And you get kind of a certain view of people when that happens. Like, I have a bunch of younger cousins, and, like, I think of, like, you're graduating college this year. I remember teaching you to talk. Or, you're graduating high school this year. I remember a time when you didn't exist yet. Like, that's, you can't kind of unknow memories of someone growing up. And, like, for me, that's something I can't reconcile. Which is, you know, why I've always kind of been uncomfortably squicked, by Elaine with either Kanon or Makoto. Anyone else, you know what, it's fine. Because in this case, I don't think that for Elaine, the age difference is a thing that even matters. Because Elaine isn't presented as someone, you know, hundreds of years old, even though he is. He doesn't have, like, the life experience of, I don't know, like, Lestat or something. I say as if I've read that book, but I haven't. It was just a friend's thesis in college, so I vaguely know the story.
God, imagine Anne Rice as Elaine.
But he doesn't have that experience of, like, watching mortal people around him, like, grow old and know them and have them die and then have to meet all these new people and living through, like, big world events. After the death of his mother and brother, he basically sat around doing nothing with his siblings, fighting one of his sister's adopted kids, and watching his dad talk to the ceiling. Like, he's kind of on an equal playing field with everyone around him, if not, you know, having the power dynamic be in the favor of anyone else, because they understand being alive on Earth more than he does. And that now that he is alive and is human, he will kind of grow old and age with the people around him.
Hmm. And Amit on this part says, it works for me. Even if it is a touch odd that he met Mifumi before and glimpsed Harumi as a child, if I recall correctly. I like that he's a nobody now, that he could get along in the human world as just a regular chap who happened to meet this successful food vendor and aspiring artist.
Yeah, and I mean, he did see her as a child, but he didn't know who she was. Like, he doesn't realize that she is the same person. Yeah, like, he was definitely not involved in the process of her growing up, and I don't think he knows that, like, she even is that child.
Yeah, and I think another thing that I really dig on, just sort of spinning up what you were saying, Sono, like, he basically did nothing because the world he grew up in was culturally fallow. Like, he might be 100 years old, but he's been spinning his wheels as far as his personal development goes for most of that time, except for the bits on this show, he's not been a proper adult until just recently, but then a lot of things when you have these immortal characters who are also basically kids always act weird if you introduce romance into the mix. I don't know. For my part, I'd mostly just like to see him have a best friend in her before having a girlfriend. Like, hey, girl, you're cool. Your grandma gave me this weird sweater thing. And she was an artist, and she's the first person I ever knew in the last century who died. Do you want to hang out? You make good takoyaki.
Yeah, like, I'm very much down with that. I would love for him to just have some friends and, like, make friends outside of the temple.
Yeah,
But I mean, if it happens, I'm not gonna feel betrayed by it.
Yeah.
The way that I have in other shows, not to name names.
How about you, Cannibal? Do you have any thoughts on this shippy note?
I don't ship.
Okay. Well then, on to our final question of the evening. I, which is to say Ahmet, who wrote this question, read the situation as Fokodo being the one who saved Kanon, and OG Makoto is hanging back to betray Takeru and kill Adel while he lets the other him handle these things like Makoto himself would. If that gets a little thorny, I'm sorry, we're dealing with two people who are the same person, except different.
But not really.
But not really, yeah. So, the question. Do you agree that both Makotos are the real Makoto? Would you like them both to stick around?
I mean, I kind of read it a bit of the same way. His reactions to what he's doing make it pretty clear that Fokodo is the one who's... Like, he's the one's like, oh, I'm gonna help you, Takeru, I'm gonna help you accomplish your goals, and, like, he jumped in and saved Kanon, and then he's like, wait, why did I do that? Wait, I don't understand my actions anymore. Cause, it surprises him that he's actually doing things with emotion behind them, and considering the people around him as friends and wanting to protect them. And, I mean, I think, you know, he's as real as he can be on that front, because, you know, he now has emotions, and he reacts to things, like, with his heart now, which is kind of at the core of what we tell people to do in Ghost, is, you know, find what your heart wants and do it. And he realized that his heart is in protecting these people, and he thinks and feels those things for himself, outside of the agenda that Adel gave him.
Hmm. And,
I mean, the agenda Adel gave him was murder all these people. And he's definitely not doing that.
Hmm. And Ahmet says, I would love to see both of them from here on out, and I think it would be neat for the show to acknowledge the full and legitimate personhood of Makoto's magical clone.
It really would. Even though, like, it's that thorny question of identity and how we assign it to others, right? If the other Makoto looks, talks, acts, and think like Makoto in a way that nobody can discern from the original, is he not Makoto? Must there be only one? Which, you know, yeah, is basically what everyone else was saying. Dude seems legit worried for Kanon and upset at himself for not being a toolbox. So that's close enough to being a Makoto. I'd love to see the dude stick around. Maybe hang out in Ganma World as Alia's advisor, something like that. Because it might get a little weird having two of you in a room together. Like, if nothing else, like,
in the
who
same
sleeps
dimension.
On the bottom, who sleeps on the bottom bunk?
It's like, okay, Makoto's gonna sleep on the bottom bunk.
Alright, well,
wait,
which one of us
crud,
is going
we're both
to work
Makoto.
Today? It's like that episode of, it's like Farscape, when there were two John Crichtons, and they're trying to play rock, paper, scissors to figure out which one's the real one. And they keep tying, because, you know, they're the same guy. It was really heavy. That was a good shot. I need to go back. Anyway, Farscape, old sci-fi, quite good.
Yeah, wasn't it from the Jim Henry,
Jim Henson, yeah.
Yeah, Jim Henson Company. Yeah, my friend talks about it a lot, and it does look pretty cool, and I would definitely watch it at some point, but I have to finish it.
It's not perfect, has not aged as well as it might have done.
I don't know, I kind of have a...
Give it a shot.
I definitely kind of have a soft spot for that specific style of 90s sort of sci-fi, so I'll definitely take a look.
Now, do we have any last-minute thoughts on this episode, or should we wrap it up?
We will do a pod... Oh, listeners, we will do a podcast on Kamen Rider 1 at some point. Ooh.
Oh, my God!
Oh, man. I can feel...
No, maybe we won't!
No, oh, no!
How about that? Maybe we won't!
Oh, dear.
Oh, alright, well, before you guys get fighting, what do you say we head on out?
Yeah.
So for the TOR Network and Uncommon Cast RX, I'm Aleph.
I'm Cannibal Saracenian. Ooh.
And I'm Sono.